Hello, I'm Bex, and welcome to the Week Junior Show. I'm joined by three of the team from the Week Junior, the magazine making sense of the world for 8 to 14-year-olds. Today, we've got editor Felicity.
Hello.
Writer Michael.
Hello.
And assistant editor of the Week Junior's monthly science and nature magazine, Kieran.
Hello.
This week, we'll be talking all about the world's oldest land animal, an important week of events, and a brilliant nature lover's garden discoveries. Plus, we'll have a debate all about the Titanic shipwreck. But before all of that, seeing as we'll be talking about the things you can find in your garden, what has everyone's favourite wildlife spot during lockdown been? Felicity.
Well, I don't have a garden, so mine isn't that great. But last weekend, I went for a very nice walk. And I just sat down on a park bench and was admiring the kind of park around me. And out of a bush scurried the biggest, most gigantic rat you've ever seen in hot pursuit of a squirrel. And I've never seen it before. It looked like the rat was going to get this squirrel. I didn't realise they had this animosity, basically. But yes, so that was mine. It was a rat and a squirrel having a fight.
I wonder what they were fighting over. Michael, how about you?
Well, mine isn't anything quite as dramatic as that. But like Felicity, I don't have a garden either. So I've been going on this riverside walk near where I live as my sort of daily lockdown exercise. And I've been enjoying watching different dog owners try and fail to stop their dogs from jumping in the river and then coming out and drenching passers-by as they shake off the water and dry off, which is quite funny to watch happen to other people. But it was less funny when it happened to me. So I'm quite wary now to keep an eye out for any dogs who might have just been for a swim.
You've learnt your lesson. And Kieran, how about you?
Well, I also don't have a garden, but thankfully nature has come to me because the other day when I was doing some dishes in the kitchen, a pigeon flew in. It sort of got two windows. There's a bit of a gap between the two. And it decided it was just going to sit in the gap between the two windows and sort of watch me do the dishes. And we sort of had a stare off, and then it decided it was going to flap away, thankfully, because I don't know quite what I'd have done if the pigeon had ended up moving forward towards me.
Yeah, I don't know how you get a pigeon out of your house, so good job it left on its own, I suppose. Yeah, that's how bizarre. I live near a very big park, and I noticed, I don't know whether this counts, but somebody has carved lots of tiny little squares and blocks into a tree that's kind of dead already. It's like a tree stump, basically. And in it, there's loads and loads of insects living around there. Lots of little animals are using it, and insects are kind of hiding inside it. And it's really cool, actually. So I think that classes as wildlife, I guess. I mean, it's not technically an animal, but it's insect. So I'm going to push it forward with that. So tell me, guys, what is your favourite fact you've learnt this week? Felicity?
Keeping on the insect theme, millipedes have been found on every single continent except Antarctica.
Oh, wow, that is a good fact. Michael, how about you?
I learned that the Pacific Ocean is larger than all of the Earth's land masses put together.
I'm just having a second in my head to figure that out. That is... that's massive, right? That means it's absolutely massive, basically, scientifically.
Basically, yeah. Very, very big.
And Kieran, how about you?
Sorry, I'm bringing it back to the insects. My fact from this week is that there are around 27,000 species of insect living in the UK, which is way more than I thought there would be.
Oh my goodness, I think I could name about four, I guess. Probably need to read a little bit more of the Science and Nature magazine. If you've learnt something amazing this week, let us know. Find us on PopJam at The Week Junior, or go and email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk. So now it's time for Real or Rubbish. Michael, tell me, what is the real or rubbish story this week?
Well, this is a very interesting story for anyone who is a fan of roller coasters, and that is that theme parks in Japan have recently reopened after the country eased the restrictions that were put in place to stop the coronavirus outbreak. However, with a very new, important and unusual rule, which is that anybody riding a roller coaster cannot scream or shout or make any noises. And this is to try and stop the virus from potentially spreading through droplets of saliva in the air. So if you go on a roller coaster, you just have to stay completely silent and make no noise whatsoever. Now, does this sound true to you, or are we taking you all for a ride?
That can't be true, surely. I mean, because your natural instinct on a roller coaster, they have been built to make you scream and cry and make as much noise as possible. It seems like a task in itself to not make any noise. And also, people will have masks, right, to help stop those droplets, surely?
I would have thought so too. And I mean, as you said, I've been on roller coasters, and just through sheer terror, I've screamed at the top of my lungs. So I can't imagine how I'd be able to stay silent on one.
Also, can you imagine how creepy that would look and sound in a theme park, just watching a roller coaster go around in silence? I can't imagine it, but I know that people are trying whatever they can right now to be safe, but that just seems one step too far. I'll have to have a think about that. So if you've not read your copy of the magazine yet, and you don't know the answer either, feel free to make your guess before the end of the show. We can find out together. Now it's time to go over to our three big stories of this week. So Kieran, what's yours?
My favourite story from the week is continuing the word of the day, which seems to be insects or creepy crawlies. And this is some exciting news from Scotland, that the world's oldest ever land animal has been found. And by that, I don't mean something that has lived for the longest amount of time, but I mean something that lived the longest ago from now. And it's a millipede-like creature, and it would have roamed the planet around 425 million years ago, which is more than 350 million years before the T-Rex ever started to walk. So it's a very, very long time ago. It's just two and a half centimetres long, and the fossil was found on the island of Kerrera, which is part of the Inner Hebrides group of islands off the Scottish west coast. It's not directly related to millipedes, but that is probably how it looked. It would have looked very similar to that when it was alive, to sort of give you an idea. And there's been quite a lot of process going into how do you date something this old. So a team of researchers from the University of Austin, which is in the US state of Texas, decided that they were going to study this fossil, which we've had for, I think it was discovered in the 19th century. So it's existed within human knowledge for ages, but we just haven't known how old it is. But they used a process that's called radiometric dating. And that is basically a process that allows you to measure different chemicals within a rock or a rocky material. And it looks to see how those chemicals would have changed over a long period of time, and using that you can work out when it was created, basically. And so this creature, which is called the Campocaris, would have lived during the Silurian period, which was a bit of prehistory that happened around 443 to 416 million years ago. And it was quite an important period of time in the development of life on Earth, and by Earth I mean land as opposed to water, because for billions of years before that, life forms had lived in the oceans. That was sort of where all life began. And then gradually, life began to move onto Earth. So around 450 million years ago, so 25 million years before the Campocaris, mosses and other basic plants began to move onto land, having previously only grown in water. And then as they became more established, some plant-eating animals followed them on land. And then after that, the predators followed as well. And that's how sort of life evolved on land. And the Campocaris would have been one of those earliest examples of an animal moving away from the water in search of food. So it's the earliest land animal that's ever been discovered. But it is likely that it probably wasn't the very first land animal ever. And the researchers think that worms probably beat them to it. They think that worms were existing beneath the surface of the planet for a couple of million years before the Campocaris ever did so.
Those sneaky worms. I am amazed. I'm going to say that you said this was discovered a long time ago, but hasn't really been kind of worked on. It hasn't been looked at properly for until now.
Absolutely. Well, it's just been that the technology isn't there. So yeah, it was found in 1899 on the Scottish island, and previous research has been done on it. But of course, as with all these things, it's not until the right technology is there that you can properly find out what it means. So quite often, some of the most incredible breakthroughs or discoveries about fossils or prehistoric creatures come from things that we've had and have found many years ago, but just didn't quite know how to analyze them properly. So it's quite exciting that, you know, we've got all of our human history's discoveries that we can still keep learning new things from.
Felicity, what have you been finding out about this week?
One of my favourite stories from this week is our main story on the home news page. And this is all about Carers Week, which is happening this week. And it's an annual campaign, so it happens every single year to highlight the role of unpaid carers up and down the country who do the most incredible heroic work imaginable. Carers are people who, and they can be young or old, they look after people because they might have an illness or a condition, but they're not paid for the work they do. And this year's theme was making caring visible so that we all are aware of the contribution that carers make to our society. And I was quite moved because I was listening to a radio program earlier this week about a 14-year-old, Natasha Bradley. She looks after her father, and he's got leukemia, epilepsy, and post-traumatic stress disorder. And because of these various conditions and illnesses, it means she does this absolutely incredible job of looking after him. She gives him his medication, she feeds him, she washes him. So it's really quite amazing. And I think the other thing to say about this story is that set against the backdrop of coronavirus and lockdown, which obviously we're all living through, it means there's an extra 4.5 million people who have now become unpaid carers who are looking after older people or disabled people or seriously ill people. So it's just a massive shout out and a massive celebration of all these people who do the most brilliant work looking after people.
So this week is all about recognising people who maybe aren't recognised usually.
Exactly. I think this is kind of this idea that you don't maybe hear about them every single day and they're not in the news. And, you know, some people aren't even aware it's going on at all. So, yeah, it's just sort of shining a light, but giving a bit of spotlight to this quiet work that's going on, which is has an absolutely huge impact on people's lives.
Well, Michael, what is your big story from this week?
Well, earlier we were talking about wildlife spots and about gardens, and one nature lover in Cambridge, England, called Paul Rule, has recorded 573 different species of animals and plants in his own garden over the course of the past 3 years. So he started a survey back in 2016 as part of a project for the Cambridge Natural History Society to find out more about the different species that are in the city. And over that time, he's found 412 different insects, which included 272 moths. He found 87 plants, 26 species of moss, and also had visitors such as foxes, hedgehogs and bats. And he did it all by looking in his garden, taking pictures and using the internet and consulting with local experts for help. And he said that the favourite thing he discovered was a species of plant hopper bug called Acerica clavicornis. So it just goes to show what amazing things you could find in your own garden. He doesn't have a massive garden. It was an ordinary sized garden. But over 3 years of just documenting and cataloguing and asking experts and looking online, he's found all these different species of plant and animal that he didn't know were there and in some cases didn't know existed. So for those of you who do have a garden and have been spending more time in it, perhaps during lockdown, maybe you might have discovered some things you didn't know were there, or this might inspire you to go out and see what you can find in your own gardens.
Well, lots of people are stuck at home at the moment, so that's a little project you can do. See how many bits of garden discoveries you can make in your backyard. So now it's time for our big debate. Last week, we debated on the podcast whether people in the UK should eat more British food. And here's what some of you had to say.
I love this message. I feel like it needs Land of Hope and Glory playing behind it. Lily and Daniel said, "We think, of course, bring in the bacon, 6 exclamation marks. We love a good English meal. All hail the scrambled eggs, squirt on the ketchup. And we are just getting started. Fry those eggs, toast that bread. Pour that fresh coffee from the coffee pot and tuck in," which is absolutely brilliant. I love it. Fiona emailed to say, "I think that we should eat more British food because it's better for the environment to eat more local food, but you can still eat food imported from other countries as it's still available. Like Bex, I love avocados and we could still eat them. We should just eat more local food."
Vivian, aged 8, sent us this voice note.
"Hello, the Week Junior team. This is Vivian, age 8 from London. And I agree with Anna because, especially at a time like this, during the coronavirus lockdown, we need to be supporting the farmers because they can't sell their products and food to the cafes and restaurants and stores and places like that. So I think we should at least eat more British food for this year. Plus, it's even better for the environment because there's not as much shipping, so there's not as many flights. And although some things may be shipped by boats, some things also are shipped by plane, so that's still climate change and pollution we're acting with.
Janvi, aged 10, said, "I think people in the UK should be able to eat whatever they wish. Not all of us are British, so we aren't used to British food. And me being Indian, there's already not enough Indian stuff, so we would not be able to celebrate our festivals with our traditional foods." Ginny, aged 11, said, "For this week's big debate, I can see both sides of the argument. It is good to support local British farmers and help with climate change, but if we don't source food from anywhere else, we may not get the chance to enjoy other foods like avocado, which we can't grow in this country."
Eva, aged 11, added, "I think British people aren't all from Britain, so they would want to eat foods from their home country. Like the rest of the population, immigrants should be able to walk into supermarkets and buy products from their home country. When we travel abroad, we expect to be able to buy British products, so that should be the same here." Jonah, aged 10, said, "I agree with both sides of the debate. I think that we should eat more British food to not put any to waste, but that we should keep the world going by eating more international food too."
Wow, that has a lot of strong opinions last week's debate. This is amazing. So as you heard, this is your chance to get involved. Grab a grown-up and record what you think of this week's debate. We might play it out in next week's show. All you've got to do is email it to us. Send it to hello@theweekjunior.co.uk. Now, this week, we're asking whether items should be rescued from the Titanic. So who can tell me a little bit more?
I can tell you a little bit more. And actually, this is a story we ran on our news pages a few weeks ago. So I'm sure we've discussed the Titanic on the podcast fairly recently, but that's because it's so great. So 2.5 miles below the surface of the North Atlantic Ocean lies the very famous wreckage of RMS Titanic. Titanic is one of the world's most famous ships, as I'm sure readers know. It was famously said to be unsinkable, but on its very first voyage in 1912, it hit an iceberg and sank. Tragically, more than 1,500 passengers and crew died, and only around 700 people survived, and that's partly because there simply weren't enough lifeboats. And then to fast forward to the present day, well, almost the present day, in 1985, the wreckage was discovered. And now in May this year, there's a company called RMS Titanic Inc., which has been given permission by a US court to go down to the shipwreck and cut into it to take out its telegraph machine. And its telegraph machine is what would have transmitted messages. So there's this idea that if they can get the telegraph machine, it might tell us about the ship's final moments. And the other thing to say is that this company owns the rights to the wreck. So that means it's the only company that can actually explore it. So no one else is allowed to do this.
Okay, this is interesting. Now, we'll be challenging Michael and Kieran on this one. So Michael is going to be saying why he thinks items should be rescued from the Titanic. Michael, do you have a stopwatch or timer nearby?
I do.
Excellent. Well, take it away when you're ready.
So earlier I mentioned the Riverside Walk that I like to go on. And on that walk is a memorial to a guy called Jack Phillips, who actually worked on the Titanic with the telegraph machine. So I know that there are lots of people who would be interested in finding out more about that and more about what happened to the ship. And, you know, some relatives and descendants of those on board will probably want to know more about what could have happened to their family members. And it's an important source of public knowledge as well. As Felicity was saying, it's one of the most famous disasters ever. It's a huge part of history. And we should be trying to find out as much as we can about it, because we might learn lessons that could help us in the future as well. And this ship has been down in the ocean floor for more than 100 years, and it's, you know, falling apart, and it could be completely lost if we don't go down there and find what we can and learn more. So for the importance of human knowledge and advancing society and finding out as much as we possibly can, I think that we should absolutely be rescuing items from the Titanic. It's of vital public interest.
Lovely. Well, an impassioned speech there from Michael, and lovely and under a minute. So I'm very impressed with that one. But can Kieran do any better? Kieran, do you have a stopwatch nearby?
I do indeed.
All right. Well, tell us why you disagree with Michael there.
The Titanic is more than just a shipwreck of huge public value and interest. It is also the final resting place of more than 1,500 people who died when it tragically sank. And in other words, that means that it's also a grave and a memorial. And I think it deserves to be treated with the same respect as any other grave site in the world. I'm not saying that people shouldn't be able to explore it or try to preserve the memories of it for future generations, but that needs to be done in a way that is guaranteed not to destroy the ship or to disturb it. Titanic now lies so far below the surface, as Felicity said, that any efforts to cut into it to remove objects may result in the entire ship collapsing from the pressure of the water, and I just don't think that that's worth the risk. I like the idea of Robert Ballard, who found the wreckage in 1985. He said that we should send down robots to cover the wreck with a special form of paint that would prevent it from further water damage, and then cameras could be installed to create a virtual online museum. It allows us to get the knowledge and complete that public interest without disturbing it.
Oh, right. Okay. You just made it under a minute there. I was very excited to hear the rest of the robotic stories from Undersea. Felicity, who do you think you agree with?
I am really, really torn. And I think there's got to be a halfway house, because I'd love to keep on exploring it and finding out all the secrets, which I think is so interesting. But I also feel there is that need to respect the people who died there. So I think I'm slightly on Kieran's side in that I would like to keep exploring. And I don't know, there must be a way to kind of make an online museum so that we can kind of take a look at what's down there and keep thinking about it without actually doing any damage. So I think I'm ever so slightly with Kieran on this one.
Wow, I could really feel your pain on that one, Felicity.
I'm very conflicted.
I have to say, I went into it agreeing with Michael, but Kieran did have some good points. I was swayed by Kieran a little bit there. So let us know what you think. Respond to the poll at theweekjunior.co.uk/poll right now, or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk if you want to get your opinion on the podcast. So now it's time to recap our real or rubbish story. Michael, can you remind me what it was again?
So this was the story that in theme parks in Japan, people have been told not to scream or shout when they ride roller coasters to try and stop potentially coronavirus from spreading further.
You know what? Although I think it's very difficult to do that, and I think, like I said, it would be very creepy to watch it happen, I'm going to say it's real. I'm going to say that's a plan that has come into force, and yes, it is real. That's my final answer.
Drum roll, please. It's real.
Oh!
So it'll be very interesting to see whether people are actually able to follow these rules or not. And as you said, what it will sound like and look like to see a roller coaster go past with just a completely in complete silence.
Oh my goodness. I said real, but I kind of didn't believe I'd be right. So I'm delighted by that. I'm very, very chuffed. Right, guys, I believe you've got a competition to tell us all about.
We do indeed. Listeners, are you a tech whiz with lots of creative ideas?
Do you want to make a difference to the world?
The BT Young Pioneer Award is hosting a competition to find the brightest young technology talent in the UK. Your task is to invent a piece of technology that will help solve a problem that matters to you.
The Young Pioneer Award aims to discover amazing ideas from young people that tackle the issues they care about the most. That could be the loneliness caused by coronavirus lockdown to the damaging effects of climate change.
The lucky winner will receive help to develop their idea with up to £10,000 in funding and the support of BT experts along the way.
To submit your award entry and fulfill terms and conditions, visit techforgoodawards.com, and the 4 is the number 4, not the word. The BT Young Pioneer Award is open to anyone based in the UK between the ages of 9 and 18. Entry is free, and you can enter as an individual or as part of a group of up to 5 people. The closing date for entries is the 30th of June. Good luck!
Yeah, good luck indeed. So that is it for the Week Junior show this week. Drop us a comment on Pop Jam at the Week Junior, or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk if you want to get in touch. And don't forget to rate, review and subscribe wherever it is you get your podcast from. Bye!
If you want to get your hands on a copy of the Week Junior magazine, we're offering a 6-week free trial. To get yours, head over to dennismags.co.uk/theweekjunior and use the code PODCAST.